So when we were talking last time about terms of speech and word, and I was trying to show that actually every word of action can mean an expression of consciousness and nothing else, so that could mean also to speak, to show, to paint, you know, to make somebody know, causative from Vidvedayati, to make somebody perceive. To make somebody perceive is to speak again. So to say, to act with consciousness in expressive manner, to give someone understanding of what is going on, make somebody understand or see. So, to communicate, yes? But here we have another very major thing, is a major terms of perception and cognition. And it is something else. It's already not an expression of consciousness, as the word does, but a perception. Yes, which is passive, so to say. Passive because it is perceptive and not active. So when perception is active, it will fall into the domain of the word immediately, in whatever form expression takes place. Yes, what is the difference? If you formulate in your own consciousness, it's as good as you do it for others. Yes. If you didn't formulate it for yourself, as sometimes it happens in the school, the teacher comes to teach without being quite sure what it is all about. Yes. And then, step by step, the teacher discovers that there is something there to know. And that is also the way of learning. Teaching may be also a way of learning, because to convince oneself, to express to oneself the truth which is to be perceived, is as good as you do it for others. So this exercise, that's why we do this exercise. Otherwise, why should we come together and I myself read this, what I wrote? Because I want to again look into this issue for myself. And if I am not doing that, that becomes boring and some, you know, one way explaining things, you know, you just listen what I tell you, and then it is not there.
And how is it with us that we really, some of us that have actually no background in this thing, why is it fascinating? As just before I spoke to someone in this class, who like me, has no background except...
Oh, you have background. Because it fascinates me also, and in that fascination, so to say, we are very alike. We are all looking for some kind of fresh perception, because it is about our consciousness. It's not about some subject, you know, Sanskrit language, remote and far away and dead language. It's not about that. We are looking for a new, how to say, perception, fresh perception of these things, which we already know. And of course Sanskrit language is very rich in this content, and you will see for yourself, especially in terms of perception and cognition, what terms are used and how they are different, especially how they are different. We will look into that, and you will see the richness of approach to paradigm of knowledge. So there are, for instance, such instances. To know what it could mean in Sanskrit could be expressed in many different ways, having many shades of meaning. Vetti, from root vid, yes? Veda, janati, bodhate, chiketi, chetati, vidhite, dhyayati, manyate, vivinakti, from here viveka, smarati, ikshate, and so on. So why there are so many words for one simple thing to know? It's itself. Gnosis, g-know, yes? G-know is coming from the same jnya, yeah? The same etymology in the European to know. So we will try to translate them and see the difference between all these terms of knowledge, of knowing. Vetti, he knows by discovering, finding out. From here we have Veda. Veda is a discovery. Veda is not the knowledge which is which you know subjectively, which you know subjectively as you know things and yourself. It is something which is not totally subjective, something which is cosmic, which is there, and which has to be discovered by you. You have to find out about these things. Now, nobody thought about this. Everybody most probably thought that the Veda would mean that subjective knowledge realization. Not at all. It's not subjective. It is rather objective in the subjective sense. So if we say he knows Saha Veda, from here vid, also to see, we have, yes, video in a Latin language, to vid, to see. To see means objectively to see. To see something which is there in front of you and not from subjective sense to see. Not to realize oneself. So, to realize oneself is jānāti. He knows by realizing himself as such. For instance, one cannot say in Sanskrit, pustakasya jñānam. This is the example which Pāṇini is using in his Aṣṭādhyāyi. Pustakasya jñānam, the knowledge of the book. You cannot say it, because this jñānam is not a proper term for it. One can only say pustakena jñānam, knowledge by the book. Why? Because it's by the book that I realize myself as such. I have this self-knowledge. It is with the help of the book that I discover myself as such. These are shades of the meanings of different things. So, there are two ways of realizing things. You may discover something which is, yes, which objectively, subjectively is, yes, this is a discovery Veda, or you may change within your self-perception, yeah? There will be a shift in your self-realization, and that will be knowledge by jñāna. Why not? Who can help you? You can realize yourself. There's no problem. You can realize yourself with the help of the book, with the help of the teacher, with the help of thought, of word, of anything. Just name it. But the function is different. The word means different thing. The word means self-realization with the help of something. Knowledge by finding out, discovering, yes? Veda, Vetti, is something else. It's another approach of the same movement of cognition. When you discover something, you found out that it is so. Yeah? You discovered that this is the truth. Yeah? It's not self-realization. Look at this subtlety. Now look at the subtlety of consciousness, which we don't even see because we are so used to put them all together into one article of knowing, And we are not used to these subtleties. So these are educational subtleties. So language gives us this opportunity to see ourselves differently approaching through cognition. Cognition can be differently exercised, not necessarily in one way, knowing everything. What is this knowing? Somebody knows what it is? How do you know we know? Exactly. Okay. So they see the same thing and they know different things. How do we know that it is so? Yes, also, why not? Yeah? The tree was there and it hit the car. Okay. It depends in which system of coordination you are looking, yes? You are sitting in the car and suddenly a tree jumps on you from nowhere. So, so what would you classify it? What is the approach? Approach is subjective. Whether you discovered it, something objectively existing to your knowledge, or you realize something within yourself with the help of this happening and you became experienced differently. This experience is jnana and discovery is Veda. Now, but there are more shades, more words. Look at this. Bodhate. He knows as he wakes up, becomes aware, suddenly he opens up to something that was there as knowledge Veda, yeah? And then you open to it up and it becomes part of your environment. So to say, in, you are in between the two, yes? So subjective self-realization and discovering. Yes, I'm always doing this, yes. I'm always breaking instead of breaking. It's just... and then I go through and correct. Yeah. So breaking through one particular subjective state, it's quite interesting, bodhate, and it is Vedic word and used in the Veda very often. By the way, more often than other words. Abodhi, hota, abodhi agni, samidha janana, agni, evoke, yeah, among these tribes. Sri Aurobindo is also using Savitri, evoke among those tribes. Yeah. So it is a subjective state of transition, breaking through one particular subjective state to another subjective state, regardless to circumstances, due to which this awakening could have taken place. It's a very complicated definition. But if you look deeper into this, you will see that awakening is not made by somebody. It is not that someone comes and awakens you. You awaken yourself. This is the meaning of bodhate, at least. Yes, if not bodhati. So this breaking through one state to another state, which is not fully yet your experience, not settled with you as self-realization. It's like you are traveling in the world stair. Yeah? You move from one plane to another, but it's not necessarily that you have an experience of it, or you know it for sure. You are already there. You're already perceiving the reality, but you are not yet realized in the sense. You're discovering it as Veda does, but this discovery is subjective, totally subjective for your sense. but not yet settled. Cicchetti, he knows by observing, perceiving, concentrating upon, becoming aware of, or focusing upon one's consciousness and holding it there. Yes? Cetati, very similar to Cicchetti. It's like Cicchetti also can be seeing, like a sight, because sight is of that faculty of fixing. Cetati, he knows by attending to, taking notice of, aiming at, intending, understanding, comprehending. From root chi, to focus, to fix one's consciousness upon the difference, the detail. The detail is noticed. It is to your notice. So that notice, that moment of noticing, is that particular faculty of cetati, becoming aware of difference. There is a shift in perception. That fresh shift in perception is chit, taking into your notice, taking notice of. Didhite, he knows by reflecting, perceiving, thinking, or even by holding on to it, keeping it in one's own field of attention. From here, dhi root, yes? Didhi is another root, which is from dhi, to hold, the power of holding. The power of holding is the power of the mind, which mind has, mental consciousness. Dhyayati is from the same dhyai. He knows by recollecting, contemplating, meditating upon the subject, thinking. Thinking in the higher sense, from dhi. Manyate, he knows by setting his heart or mind onto it, by recollecting, mentioning, meaning, minding, mentalizing. Also from here we have manas, mati as opinion. Yes? Opinion is something which is mentalized truth, so to say, on which you are working with your mind to fix it in the mind and to hold on to it, to know it, to carry it with yourself as a product of the mind, which you can always refer to later. By memory. Vivinakti is distinguishing, discriminating, discerning, and by that knowing. Now, all of these major roots which indicate cognition can be used with one or several prefixes, changing their meaning dramatically. For instance, upavit, to assert, learn, investigate, inquire into. Samvid, to know together, to be fully conscious of. Anuvid, to know thoroughly in every sequence, to discover step by step. Anusamvid, I'm taking only vidrut, this discovery. So you can see how it is interesting. Upavid is closely discovering, to learn, to investigate, to inquire into, so to say, nearby, discovering from nearby towards the depth. Samvit, to know absolutely, to be fully conscious of, to be fully discovering, yes? From all sides knowing, seeing from all sides. Anuvid, following the discovery in every sequence, yeah? Knowing thoroughly, step by step. Not together, not totally, but in detail. Anusamvit, again, to know together, with, or in consequence. These are subtleties. By the way, you can yourself translate as you like, because these are just ways of trying to translate these words. Yeah? Yes. These are prefixes. Prefixes to the root vid. No, vid is a root. Vetti. Yes, to know, he knows by discovering, finding out. This is vid, rut, yeah? Upavetti. These are the examples. So vid is everywhere throughout. Vid is to know. Huh? No. Root vid. Yeah. It's a vid, yeah? Okay, I'm confused with this, but I didn't give the root. It wasn't jnā, to know, jānāti, yes? It's another bud root. And so on, bodhati. So, if I take this root vid to discover, to find out, yes? With prefixes, to discover nearby would mean to learn, investigate, inquire into, to ascertain. Some vid, totally discover, to know together, to be fully conscious of. To know it from all sides, to discover it from all sides, to discover it totally, to find out absolutely. That means to be fully conscious of. But this is only a token how we can really understand these meanings. Yes? You can give your own. It doesn't matter. You can find your own equivalents, and in every text it would have something else which you may put every time. So this flexibility in the mind to find appropriate meaning to the word in the context is something which we lost. We are so fixed in our mental consciousness to know this word by that meaning that we are not even aware what we are doing. To become aware what is going on really in reality, what is that cognition? Is it a discovery, or it is self-realization, or it is a fixing consciousness upon holding on to it, paying attention, mentalizing, fixing it in the mind? We are not aware. We are saying knowing, but that's not enough. Those details of knowing, and with prefixes, they all have meanings, different meanings. Moreover, somewhere even, I suddenly understood one simple thing, that Veda can be discovered only through the language, by the way. Language is the only systematic and scientific ground through which we all can understand Veda in the similar way. Though we will all have different experiences, there will be different approach to the same knowledge, but we will cognize that difference because we have the same ground which is in the language. Language is the only foundation on which we can have this similar perception. So if we are using root vid, Veda, and we have understood that, what it means, every time we come to this word in all this with these prefixes, we would have a similar approach on movement of consciousness. Though we will perceive different things, but we will have the same movement of consciousness, and we will recognize that we are moving in the same manner, and it will be a joy and of approaching and perceiving it in a richer way, because every time everybody perceives a little different, and that difference will be cognized. Does it make sense? Consciously, in the Veda, it is absolutely consciously. Sri Aurobindo even prefixes translate separately. He gives them even the whole sentence to one prefix. Yeah? We were doing this, we started to do this more and more consciously, like prefix pra, which means forward. But etymologically, if you look deeper into this forward prefix, you will see that it has this connotation of filling, or fulfilling. Fulfilling towards the future, towards the movement. So it's a fulfilling movement of some action of the root which is behind. Now, if you start seeing it everywhere, it becomes an amazing thing, because it frees your mind. Yeah? Your mind is not fixed by the word anymore. It looks for the movement of consciousness. And it can be any word explaining it. Yes. Well, it doesn't matter, because in every context it will be different. Like he is giving example now. I hear immediately what he wants to say. Because what he is saying now, I'm not sure that you even hear that, what he said. Because what he said, that some is used sometimes so consciously that it will be, if you translate it to yourself, it will be knowing together, discovering the truth together, coming together and seeing from all sides. You can put any kind of contextual explanation to that movement of samvid. Yeah? And if you see it in the context of the hymn, you will see why it is used. For Vishvadeva song, for all the gods come together in this celebration of knowledge, in this feast, in this, you know, Shakespeare is using this, not the celebration, but there is another word of, not feast, there is another word. This kind of, you know, coming together to celebrate the battlefield, you know. In celebration of the battle they come, all the armies. So it's also a very interesting notion of happiness to come together in this endeavor, or in this particular movement of consciousness, or this discovery and seeing things from all different sides together. What does it mean to see together? We are not yet even sure what it means. We are seeing subjectively things. We are not seeing together. Seeing together is unknown to us. So, well, I'm saying that it is all very charged with this movement of consciousness which has depth of its own discovery. So, and we would recognize that everybody took a little different shift and now sees from that particular angle. I'm now trying to say something impossible, so you forgive me if it is not going through. Because to discover this universality of Sanskrit is not such a simple thing, but it is universal. It operates by these universal meanings. So we all can understand it. Anuvid, so knowing, discovering step by step, discovering by following it up. Anusamvid, it's by following, discovering totally, to fully. Step by step, discovering fully. Holding that which was discovered before and adding to it another step. A little different than just following. So there is an emphasis by this prefix, opratividh, to understand as facing you, yes, to perceive, to become acquainted with. Pratisamvid, also, to face it and totally cognize it. Oh, here it is causative. Pravid, to know, to understand, openly, directly, fulfillingly, yeah, to anticipate, interesting, yes? If we compare to with providence, providence, I'm using the same etymology, yes? To fulfill vision forward.
Now, all these subtleties of recognition, do they apply to concrete things? Like, for instance, if I say, I know the tree, there would be many ways of knowing the tree. You could analyze it, or you could feel its vibration, or you could think how nice it is when the fruit gets ripe, and all that.
Very true.
So you can use these words and...
Exactly. So you will be very precise how you know the tree. Yeah? Not that I know the tree is very nice. It's not enough. Yeah? You will say what you know about it, that you think that this is beautiful, or you have experience of its own, so to say, beauty. As Mother says, yes, the tree is trembling when the sunset is there, the psychic vibration in the plants, she explains. So there will be always a very particular, if we are conscious of it. If we are not, of course, we will put whatever word comes into our mind. But if we are conscious within the system of etymons and we consciously choose those possibilities to express it, then we would use differently. Now, I wanted to show with Jnana the same exercise, how many roots Jnana gives you. And you will see the richness. I just give few roots, and now I see we will look into them from this particular angle of prefixes. So samjnana is an essential sense, as Shubindo translates. So to say, a realization of oneself in this sam, in the embracing or inclusive movement, yes? It's, so to say, apprehensive inbringing consciousness, feeling samjnana. Essential sense. When you include the object of sense into yourself and you say, this object is me, I feel it. Yeah, I have a sense of it. Yeah. Subjectively, I have a sense of it. It means I feel it in myself. I know how fish feels. Yes? It was an anecdote with Joan Zayas, you know, yes? With fish feeling fish. He was going with his disciple and he said, oh, how beautiful fish, how fish is happy in the pond, jumping out. And his disciple said, how do you know? You are not the fish, how fish feels. And he looked at him and said, how do you know that I don't know? You are not me. So this is exactly where that, if you argue like this, so why do you say to me that I do not know? Because your argument already implies that you cannot know what I know. So this subjective samjnana, feeling how the fish feels within yourself, essential sense. Vijnana, comprehensive knowing. V means this widening out in detail, knowing two opposite things as one. Knowing two hemispheres in one place, the transcendental and this. This is what Sri Aurobindo says, it's supermind, vijnana. Yes? Knowing in all details, in all properties, in all positions, things in detail. Subjective knowing. Yeah? Subjective self-realization of all the properties, details, positions of all. Ajnana, a concentration, a command. So to say, A is up to, say, realization up to or towards in a sense different from pra, imposing one's own self-subjective state upon the object. This imposition of your subjectivity on something which is not you is that power of concentration or command. Command, can you imagine, from cognition, from knowing, suddenly command comes out. The action of force. Prajnana, an apprehensive knowing by analytical and synthetic cognition. So to say, coming out, as Shubin says, is if samjnana is in bringing, then prajnana is outgoing. Outgoing to this object of knowing and knowing it separately by synthetic and analytic cognition. So analyzing it, seeing the differences within the object objectively. And this is the subjective realization. So holding the object, as Shubindo says, holding the image of thing and approaching it and knowing it through analytical and synthetic cognition. Now there are a few more here. Parijnya. Pari is around. To notice, to observe, to comprehend, look, to know subjectively around, yes? To feel on the periphery, or to know it up to the periphery, to observe, to roam around with subjective comprehension. Abhijna, it's against, yes? Knowing against, to recognize, cognition as recognition. Suddenly you remember, to remember, to acknowledge, so to say, to subjectively face something and acknowledge or remember, recognize. Pratijna, to approve, again facing, against, knowing against, to approve, to admit, to promise. Look, these meanings, we never thought about them. What promise means, or admission, or approval. These are the movements of this subjective self-realization, facing something which is there. Yes, an admission, an approval, these are all subjective states. They are not objective. They are not finding out, discovering. That's why jnana is used. If you go deeper into this, you will see how well it is arranged. Upajna, to know around, or close to invent by oneself. Apajna, so to say, to know out, down. Can you imagine such a thing? To know or to realize oneself down. To conceal, to dissemble.
For example,
there are more even.
When you are like an artist or a musician, to like Mozart, for example, to know the melody somewhere in his mind, this be upajna, that word?
Maybe. It's close to Veda to discover, yes, because you are subjectively approaching the thing. Subjectively you are close to that. It is here, nearly here already, but you don't have yet means to hold it, yes? Subjectively within you, you feel it, that it is knocking onto your doors.
Then you have to concretize it.
Yes.
The other forms of this same word, perhaps.
You see, to... Yes. Yes, there can be other approaches to the same meaning from other roots, and they would have another look at it, because it's another door to approach it. Less subjective, more objective, or less differently approached, yes, through discrimination or concentration or consideration and so on and so forth. But not through self-realization, which is nearing self-realization. Well, I understand that it is nearly impossible to hold all this, but nevertheless, we are just doing it once to see the exercise, what we might do one day with our consciousness. There are also more complex words like pratyabhijñāna, prati-abhijñāna, samvijñā, and so on. Abhijñāna Shakuntala. Yeah. Abhijñāna, as we see here, to recognize, to remember. So, well, she was Abhijñāna Shakuntala, she was recognized, remembered. She was forgotten, and then she was remembered. That's about that. Remembering Shakuntala. So it seems that language itself was conceived as an expression of consciousness and its activities. So all the words derived from the roots, meaning, action, and being, could thus come to mean cognition, similar as expression. Yes? For instance, such words like bhavana, from root bhu. Yes, it's a causative from bhu, to be, to become. When used in causative sense, would mean supporting being, meaning meditation, contemplation. So what supports our being can be also that deep look, bringing deep perception into the being. So that's how it was used. For it is consciousness which is supporting being, sankalpa, will, intention, from root klip, to fit, to correspond, to be suitable, or abhyasa, in yoga philosophy, the effort of the mind to remain in its unmodified condition of purity, sattva. This is the meaning from the dictionary. From root as, to throw, abhi, around. Abhyasa is throwing around. We throw here and there and here and there, all the time throwing it out, is holding it, repeating it, repetition, learning it all the time. So, you see, this throwing around could mean in the cognitive sense as learning, repeating, holding in the mind, yes, remembering. So every movement of consciousness can be expressed through other words, not necessarily meaning direct cognition. We are using it in the same way in English and any other language, only we are not aware of it very much. Yes. Learning.
Practicing,
yes. What is practicing? What is repeating? Yeah. Repeating is not cognitive state, but once we go into the realm of cognition, it means has meaning of cognition. Now, even such roots like kri, to do, to make, it can get a meaning in the same manner as bhu, clip, us, to throw, of the cognitive faculties of consciousness. Angikri, to take the side of, or to agree to, yes? To assent, to promise, to confess. So to say, to make your own part, yes? To accept, angikri. Adhikri, to place at the head, to appoint, to aim at, to regard, to refer to. So, anukri, to do afterwards, to follow in doing. To imitate, to copy, to equal. Why I'm saying all this? Because we have to step out from this kind of narrow-minded perception of words where they mean only one thing. They are universal faculties, universal movements, and can have many significances, and can be applied to cognition or to action. And there will be no big difference between the two. Because whatever is manifested outside is nothing but that supraphysical reality, which is coming to the outside. That's what Vedic rishis recognized, about which Sri Aurobindo says, that this manifestation is nothing but outcome of this supraphysical reality. The same imagery, the light, the darkness, the sun, the stars, the heaven, the earth, man, eyes, seeing, touching, these hands which are the expansion or rays of power to manifest, to arrange, to touch, to move things. Where all these meanings are coming from? By chance? No, not by chance. They are reflected from the supraphysical reality of things. And Sanskrit is very good at it. Projects that supraphysical reality directly into the physical reality. And it can be used outwardly or inwardly, without big shift. Of course, we will use different words in our English to explain those meanings. But we have to be prepared to see it wider. I was suddenly kind of struck by this. The same example of such a use in English would be "you are kidding." What we can see here is that language itself was a product of consciousness, where the perception was implied in every action done by it, even if it was not listed or translated in the dictionary as such. Yes, it still could be used by the speaker, denoting a particular perception or particular state of being. You are kidding. Kidding has nothing to do with being a kid. It's a state of mind, or perception, or action of consciousness. So you see, it's an open field. It's a huge field, and can be applied in many contexts. I'm not using bad words. In English, it's so rich with bad words. Sometimes you're just wondering, you know, when you look at this, how they are using those words. verbs. So here I was going into all these kind of different words which are listed in the dictionary for you to see. I didn't touch few of this, like hearing, seeing, thinking, smri, remembering, and so on and so forth. So most probably I will end today on this note. So all this file will be for you there to look into if you like. There are many interesting things here. It was written for psychological purposes, for the dictionary to use by psychologists, that they would approach Sanskrit differently than linguistically only. Psychologically it has to be approached. And we have to train our psychology to see it, otherwise we will have nothing to do with Vedic texts. Vedic texts are deeply, profoundly psychological in that sense. And we have to train ourselves to be able to see what is written there. Otherwise we become Western scholars translating it in very simple manner, simplified manner. Indra, the chief of the village, got drunk and killed our enemies who stole our cows and brought cows back to our village. That's what consciousness, which is not able to see in the universal terms, can translate, because the meanings are fixed. And he was drinking soma, got drunk, it's clearly there. Soma is some kind official translation. Official translation of the Rig Veda. Yes. Yes. So last time we looked into what the exercise was here, to widen the perception of these terms and to understand that they have to be all viewed through the action of your consciousness and not learned separately, yes? And fixed separately, that you may know them separately. No, you have to try out through yourself and see how it works. And then it becomes an absolutely marvelous exercise. So Sanskrit itself becomes a philosophy of consciousness, not philosophy of life, of language, but philosophy of psychology of consciousness. That's what I try to bring to Matthias every time, and he resists very strongly. Because he thinks, why this linguistic, what it has to do with the word? We have experiences, we close. Why do we need the word? And I always tell him, but the word is exactly how you know to close the eyes and to see the light. How would you know that you see the light? How do you know that you are in the silence? By what means would you know? Yes. It is that through that word you know that it is silence. Otherwise you would not even know that you are in the silence. There is no way to know it without the word. Exactly. How he would communicate it to his mental consciousness, what happened to him. He would be completely blank. Yes. Or would not remember it. So we had a struggle for several years with this, and slowly he is kind of approaching that word thing, because Veda is that word. It's the only sure ground through which we may know in a similar way. If we don't have the word, everybody can interpret anything. Yes? If it is something else and you think, no, you can't think something else because the word is fixing it. You have a freedom of reception, but the fixation is also there. Within that particular framework, you can have freedom of perception. And that's the beauty of it. So it's scientific, it's systematic. It is knowable.
So you find things without narrowing them down.
Yes. You don't need to know it as a religion or some kind of experience you don't have, that's why you cannot speak about it. No. You can approach it through the word and have an experience of it. And quite different from those who have it somewhere else. But you will recognize it as similar in approach. And you will enrich yourself from others telling you about their experiences, because you will recognize similar approach through the word. Because word defines that approach of consciousness. Does it make sense? That's what we are doing linguistically here. Why linguistics is such a fundamental thing. First of all, Sanskrit was not a language. There are two types.
The language had to start here.
There are two origins of language. One is that what we call knock-knock language, yes? That oink-oink language, which we imitate our outer reality. And other is somewhere there in the depth of consciousness, there is a as it is expressed, there are thousands of sounds in the highest heaven, and those sounds are systematically covering all possible expressions of consciousness. Now these root sounds from which our linguistic roots are derived, they were seen by the rishis. The language was cognized, seen in the highest consciousness. And expressed, so put into the movement. So subjectively it was brought out. The subjective experiences were brought out, not objective. There was no need in objective reflection.
This is from the illumined mind.
Yes, from the higher mind.
Yes.
At least we do not know from which mind, maybe even higher than illumined.
Mm-hmm.
But there were these possibilities of consciousness being expressed in universal terms found itself, this language found itself expressed in those, in that system of etymons, possibilities of systematic expression of meanings. There are five levels of articulation, psychological states of articulating certain sounds are subtly present in the sound, in the varna of the sound, in the color of that particular vibration. Actually, it's not even a vibration, it's articulation. Particular color of articulation. Well, it's the same, by the way. Articulation means when we articulate certain sounds, we are in a certain state. And that state is different every time when this articulation takes place. We are not aware anymore because we are mental beings. We are thinking, we are drawing by these paints. We are not seeing colors anymore. We are seeing structures. We are looking for structures. We are not looking for richness of expression of consciousness anymore. We are very poor in a way. But we have to find that depth again. And that comes from that original, so to say, vibration color, which can be put into motion, and you have to generate or create your word by the structure, with the help of the structure or grammar, you put it into the expression and you feel its color. Poets feel it. They see the difference between different words.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Vedas are already so much developed, so I can't imagine developing them more than they are.
But they're laying with all of these extrapolations and proofs and combinations that come from the original root words.
Right.
But I have another question. How does the chair know how to be the chair?
It's a very, very true question, by the way. It's about everything. A chair would not be a chair if there would be no consciousness of a chair. And you can agree with that. If there would be no need of a chair to support somebody's body, it would not be created in this form. The very form which appeared useful for us to sit is because there are other meanings, forms around. Like our body, yes, has a particular constitution. That's why chair has this particular form. So, you see, it is not alone in this variety of shapes or meanings. All these meanings are interacted, related, otherwise it would not appear such. The same with trees, with the sun, with the light, water, everything. Everything is interlinked into one global, meaningful oneness. Of bits, it's like a mosaic, meaningful mosaic. It can't be some other shape because it would not fit. It should fit, and it fits. It fits well. It does its work. So there is this what Georges was referring as intelligent design of things in the evolutionary process. Now scientists finally came to that. If there would be minutest alteration some 200 million years back, this would not appear in this particular way, and that beetle would not have those legs and would not have that particular way. So intelligent design, who knew how to drive that thing through to come to this particular point? So it's a fascinating question. How chair knows how to be a chair, how we know how to sit and not to fall. It's an amazing question. And it is, it doesn't require much of the answer. You start analyzing how all these meanings, forms, because they are forms, but meaning behind it, what? What is the meaning? To sit, to rest, yes? What for we need to sit? Yeah? We need for some reason, because there is an action of consciousness which is in sitting is better exercised. So there is a depth of that meaning which we cannot perceive. It's like mental structure, it's very true. Mental structure clarifies each word for only particular purpose. The same shapes, you can see this is a computer, you cannot use it as a hammer or anything. You can, of course you can, when you are very angry with somebody. Yes. It's all deeply psychological.
When somebody used it as a chair, there was a need of the chair, then the chair came.
This need of the chair is the word. the word which manifests the need, the meaning to have a particular form. The word is preceding the form. The form is following the meaning. The meaning is to be there, to sit. And the meaning of the light only, the meaning of the word. All these meanings were there before they actually were actualized. Chair doesn't have any meaning anymore. No, for us also, it's just a token. We are so mentalized that we do not have language anymore to express a particular action of consciousness. In Sanskrit it will be asanam, sitting place, or asandaha, yes, that which supports you in sitting, or gives you sitting. But here, what we have? Chair. Who knows why it is a chair? It doesn't say that it is to sit. So they etymologically it's not transparent, it's not clear. Of course Latin helps a little, or Latin origin like computer, yes, it will help, because transparent etymology to Latin, that's a... Yes. Yes, they want to name things that it will be clear what it is. Alright, so we finished today our course, and we will not have any more class. I think this is today the last time.